We are live, episode number 2 of Bachelorette Unfiltered and Unapologetic with Bradley and Dina. I got bad news for you folks. Unfortunately, Dina is overseas and unavailable for this episode. And I'll be honest, I put out a feeler on Facebook to see if anyone wanted to co-host with me. And there weren't many serious takers. I don't know what it is. I think being on the Bachelorette Unapologetic and Unfiltered is an honor. But clearly, it doesn't move the dial like it used to. So here I am doing the monologue tonight. Night of the first episode of the week. Obviously another episode coming up tomorrow, given that the NBA Finals preempted The Bachelorette 2 weeks ago. So we're going to be coming in early and often with content. And like I said, this is just going to be a lot of stream of consciousness with all of my takes. As the episode happened tonight, I was taking notes. So I'm going to be going in order, sequentially, through all my thoughts. And hopefully you can absorb all them, consume it, and let me know your thoughts as we get through it. So where we left off last episode, where Kenny and Lee were heading outside for a good old-fashioned parking lot brawl after Lee said some stuff to Rachel in the one-on-one during a cocktail party. Obviously, Kenny did not take too kindly when Rachel brought that up. So Kenny's like, hey, can we go talk outside? And Kenny was just like, hey, Lee, can you just be quiet for a little bit so I can give you my thoughts? I'm going to be chill. I'm going to be calm. And frankly, Kenny was pretty calm, and he just really wanted Lee to listen, be quiet, let him say his piece, and move on. And the second Kenny opens his mouth and starts talking, Lee starts chirping him. And anyone that's been in a heated conversation with a significant other or a friend or someone who just wants them to hear them out knows if you open your mouth in that situation after being politely asked to be quiet, that just is an ounce of disrespect that is not going to be tolerated. And clearly, Kenny did not take kindly. You could see his blood starting to boil. And he really was not thrilled with how Lee was going about that. You got to give credit to Lee. I mean, for better or for worse, set aside the types of things we talked about last episode where Lee's had some racist tweets. And I mean, even as a sports fan, oftentimes I'm able to distinguish between who a player is off the field and who they are between the lines. And Lee, for better or for worse, is the type of character you want on the show just because he pushes buttons. He's an instigator. He's an antagonist. And it's someone that we kind of need on the show when you have a lot of blah personalities. And Lee knew how to push Kenny's buttons. Now, Kenny did not get physical. You kind of have to respect his restraint in that respect. But at the same time, he started calling Lee a snake, which Lee is, admittedly. But Kenny, I thought, did a decent job of walking away and not trying to make this a bigger thing and having a blow up where he would make Lee's comment of him being aggressive actually take flight, and before you know it, Rachel's getting wind of that, and Kenny's heading home because he punched, you know, Lee in the face, which he did not do, and you kind of have to respect his self-restraint on that one. So then we see, as part of that cocktail hour, I just want to quickly touch on the date with Brian and Rachel. Brian, being the massage guy, got the first impression rose, and the thing I noticed is Brian's just not someone that wants to get lost in the fray, all the drama. Brian is just smooth-talking, he's confident, big-time kisser, and Rachel just likes him. And she said, listen, you seem too perfect, too good to be true, and he returned the favor, and he fought fire with fire, which kind of respect. It turns the dial back on her and says, hey, I think you're too perfect for me. I don't even know what to do with myself. And before you know it, they're making out. I just think Brian, the way he carries himself, and we'll talk about that later when we look at the one-on-one date, he just is a full package, and he's got confidence that some of these other guys don't have, and he seems very, very well put together. Then you see Kenny and Lee go back into the room, and they start throwing jabs back at each other because Brian gets the group date rose, and Kenny does the right thing. He does the upstanding thing and says, congrats, Brian. You're doing it the right way. You deserve this. And he throws jabs and says, well, you're not snaking anyone, and that obviously was in direct reference to Lee, who was in the room. And Lee obviously didn't take too kindly and said, like, what's up with that, bro? And Kenny just started throwing out some barbs, which really cracked me up. He called him a bitch-ass dude. Kenny said he'd like to lay his balls on his face, his being Lee. He said he wanted to shit in his boots. And you could just see as they got up and left, once Rachel had left the premises, Lee and Kenny were going at it, and you knew that this was not going to be the end of it. And honestly, this type of drama, forget about Blake and Waboom, this is Taylor versus Corinne type stuff from last season. So I was really feeling like this episode was about to explode. We obviously are going to see in the two-on-one date that indeed did happen. Then the next thing that happened was Jack Stone, of all people, I mean, I don't understand this at all, but credit to Rachel for giving him a shot. Gets a one-on-one, and it just, Jack from the beginning just seemed awkward. He has like kind of a, just a creepy smile. I just wasn't feeling it. I just felt like he never really had a connection with Rachel from the get-go. But anyway, they have their date, and they're doing some dance lesson. And from the beginning, it just did not seem like they had a connection. I was watching Jack's eyes, and later on, he said he couldn't stop thinking about how beautiful Rachel was, and he kept looking at her in the eyes, and that's why he was messing up the dancing. But what I saw was him looking down at his feet and not at Rachel in the footage that they showed, and I just felt like it was very uncomfortable and awkward, and you could even see it on Rachel's face. And then they're doing those interviews with Rachel where they say, you know, she's saying, I'm not really feeling it with him. I don't know what it is that's missing. There's some X factor. And I'm thinking to myself, there's nothing you're missing. The guy's just a squid. He's not bringing much to the table at all. Obviously, I think he had some tragedy growing up. I think his mom passed away or something like that. But outside of that, I really don't know what Jack brought to the table. He just was pretty irrelevant to me. And then you see after that dance lesson, they go out to this pier and Jack says he really wants to kiss her, and there was just an incredibly awkward kiss encounter. He kisses her on the lips. She kind of pulls away and just hugs him. And for someone like me who's been rejected in that type of situation, that's just, you got to know that she's not feeling it. And Jack was talking about, oh, how it was his most special first kiss. He hasn't dated in a while. And I'm thinking to myself, this guy just doesn't read the cues. Rachel was not into it. She pretty much only afforded him a peck on the lips, and that was about it. So I just feel like when you look at what Jack brings to the table and what Rachel brings to the table, Jack is just awkward and blah, and you stack him up against a Brian or a Peter, he just has no shot. He can't even make eye contact with her when they're dancing, let alone in that section. Rachel is just so bubbly. She's charismatic. She's friendly. She's smiley. She laughs a lot. To me, she needs someone that can fit that personality of being, you know, confident and have a bravado to them. Jack obviously does not have it. Then you see her do something which she did earlier in the episode, which you honestly have to kind of think about what Rachel is doing, whether it's, these are things that the producers put up to her. She's in the one-on-one at the end with Jack, and she's at dinner, and you could tell she's about to tell Jack, hey, listen, I'm not feeling it, and she's going to send him home. And she brings out the rose. She holds the rose in her hand, and that's muzzling an ox in front of its feet. I mean, if you're Jack and you're seeing her grab the rose and you think from your perspective this date is going so great, and she brings out the rose, you're thinking, okay, I'm about to get that rose. I'm locked up. I can go to the next round. No concern at the rose ceremony. She, with the rose in hand, says, listen, I'm just not feeling it. I don't know what it is. You're a great guy. I mean, she even tears up a little bit, and I do think Jack is a good dude. I just think he's one of those guys, like Jonathan, who just has no business being on the same playing field as some of these other guys. And I realize it's hard for the producers to get 25 legitimate contending guys at the same time. I just think Jack, you know, it wasn't gonna happen. And I respect Rachel for giving him a shot, but then sending him home and not having it draw out unnecessarily when you could just tell immediately it was not gonna happen with those guys. Then I was cracking up because they go back to Lee, obviously. Lee's drawn in the eyeballs, him and Kenny going back and forth. And Lee made a comment where he literally said verbatim, I don't understand the race card, i.e. what does that mean? And that got a laugh out of me. Clearly, Lee knows that he's a racist. He's from the South. He said some stuff. He's clearly targeting the black characters on the show. But him saying he doesn't understand the race card makes me think he's just not self-aware at this point. Either that, or he's just an unbelievable troll, and he knows how to, you know, pander to the cameras. And he said that. I mean, listen, I don't understand the race card. That is a savage comment by Lee. Of all people to say they don't understand playing the race card, I honestly have to kind of respect the hustle, you know, if you're asking me. Then there's that awkward. I know I'm going a little bit out of order because my notes clearly are not great. Jack, when asked by Rachel, I think this was the nail in the coffin for him. Rachel asked him, if we could do anything right now and we were back in Dallas, given that both Jack and Rachel are from Dallas, what would we do right now? Jack had one of the creepiest comments you could ever possibly say. And listen, I've been in one-on-one dates before where I've said some things that I obviously regret in retrospect. But when I heard this one, I was just like, man, this is cringeworthy. I cannot even possibly fathom saying something like this in a date where someone asked me, hey, what is one thing we could do if we could do anything? He says, quote, I would go back to my house, lock the door, lay in bed, and hang out. Which is just so creepy. It's such a thoughtless comment. The way he said it, he doesn't say it with just like a sparkle in his eyes. Just a weird dude. Such a bizarre comment. Obviously, Rachel was like a little bit taken aback by it. And that was just, like I said, the nail in the coffin for Jack. See you later. And that was about it. So now we go to the rose ceremony. And really, only two people got sent home. One of them was Jonathan. Let's pour one out for Jonathan. I mentioned him last week. He's just the sad case on the show. You gotta wonder what kind of pool of candidates were available to the producers that Jonathan not only made the show, given that he really doesn't bring much to the table besides being a good tickler, but that he made it this far really speaks to how poor some of the other guys were ahead of him. And then Iggy says goodbye. Honestly, adios, Iggy. You were a fucktard this whole time. I said this last episode. All you did was spend your time in one-on-ones just shitting on other people and not actually trying to grow closer to Rachel. And then in his exit interview, you see him tearing up, talking about how he really felt like he had a connection with Rachel. Like, bullshit, dude. You didn't have shit with her, because you never made the effort. All you cared about was protecting her from other dudes and not actually making the case for yourself. So I have no problem with Iggy. His time had come, and I think Rachel saw what everyone else saw, which is that Iggy is just a troublemaker who likes tittletaling, and no one likes a good tittletale. The other thing was that was really comical, and you just love, the producers know how to do this, to splice it up, just make it look so awkward for the people that said things. Iggy said something like, people have been making drama in the house are going to be sent home. Obviously, that was not the case, considering he got sent home, and Jonathan got sent home. Jonathan obviously not being a troublemaker, and Iggy himself got sent home. The other thing with the rose ceremonies that stood out to me, Eric got the first rose. Now, I'm not a bachelor or bachelorette expert in terms of history, but I feel like the first rose should go to someone that, you know, is probably a no-brainer. You want to give them as little bit of stress as possible by taking out the suspense. You give them the rose. We talked about this last episode. Eric is such a head case. I really don't understand what Rachel sees in him. Every time he's around, you just feel like he's on the verge of combusting, of blowing up in some respect. He seems like he's mentally unstable. But again, Rachel sees something in him that the rest of America doesn't. I don't really get it. Then you got Adam. Adam's the guy with a really big head. Kind of looks like a frat bro meathead. I don't really know what he brings to the table. He got the third rose. I don't really know how he's been relevant. I just haven't seen him connecting with Rachel at all. But again, there's probably some things that the producers aren't showing us that are contributing to how Adam's getting a rose. And then the only other person that really stood out that got a rose is this guy, Matt. Honestly, if I said who Matt was, you probably couldn't point him out. He's the guy that's got a beard, balding on top. Again, have not seen him do anything of relevance this entire show, but he got a rose over someone like Iggy and Jonathan, which again, I don't hate, because I said Jonathan had no business being on the show in the first place, and Iggy was a little fuck, so I don't really care about that. Then we go back to Lee, right? At the end, you got Kenny and Lee are one of the last few to get a rose, and they go to Lee. I love how they do this. The suspense is building up. And Lee says, I don't like conflict at all. Just another hilarious comment from Lee. Clearly the guy at this point, now I'm starting to come together with the thought that Lee is just saying stuff that just makes people either hate him or love him, you know, for better or for worse. He says stuff that's just outlandish and makes no sense. The idea that Lee doesn't like conflict when all he does is stir the pot. He's an instigator. He provokes people, which again, I've said, I like Lee as a character on the show, just like I like Corinne. I thought Corinne was outstanding for the show. It's just the fact that Lee is just not a good person outside, and I'm able to distinguish that. I understand those of you that listen and watch the show that despise Lee because he is a bad person. I'm just trying to find the difference between Bachelorette Lee and real person Lee, and Bachelorette Lee makes me want to watch week after week. And then obviously the producers do what the producers do, and they made sure that Kenny and Lee were the final two to receive roses. But I just have a gripe with something that I saw with the producers and how the episode was portrayed. They had a coming up later in the episode preview, which I usually don't watch, but I honestly saw about 10 seconds of it, and I saw that Lee and Kenny were still around. So even before the rose ceremony had ended, I knew Lee and Kenny were going to make it. I don't know why they do that with people that are still, you know, on the cusp. And I get that they wanted to show that there was going to be some fireworks down the line, but for me, that's why I don't watch commercial previews, let alone episode previews at the end of a show. That kind of ruined it for me. The rose ceremony suspense was taken away. I was just like, I know Lee's going to be in this because there's a preview of another confrontation between Kenny and Lee. So I think they got to clean that up. That should not be happening at all with characters that were definitely on the bubble in Lee and Kenny. I thought there was a decent chance that one or if not both of them were going to go. I saw that they were in the later part of the show. I was like, all right, well, they're both going to be there. So kind of a mistake by the producers on that one. So then the remaining guys make their overseas trip to Finland. My bad. Oslo, Norway. Finland, I believe, was Nick's season. Nick's season, obviously, they went when the final three were around in the freezing cold. This time around, it wasn't as cold. There wasn't snow on the ground, but it also looked cold as dick. Those guys, every scene they had of people outdoors, everyone was panting and looked like they were shivering and miserable. Clearly didn't pack very well. And Rachel says, hey, listen, I got a one-on-one date, and it's with Brian. And Brian got the first impression rose. Brian's the one that has made all the right moves so far, and Brian was my pick to win it all after the first episode. I really thought Brian has something special that he brings to the table. So their date is rappelling down a very high, I don't know what it is, like it was a high building or something like that, and they had to rappel down kind of like if you were climbing a rock wall, you'd be rappelled, climb that down that rope, from a very high height. And you could tell Brian isn't in love with being so high. But here's where I'm going to take issue with Dean last week. Dean outright showed his fear and just didn't really man up when it came to this the date that they had in the blimp. A freaking blimp. Meanwhile, this is you are exposed to the outdoors if you're Brian. You're much higher. Much more can go wrong. And he's like, you know what? If Rachel can do this, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be brave. And that's why, in my opinion, Brian is just a different class in terms of how Rachel is going to perceive both Dean and him. Brian just was tough, and I respected that about him. That's why I think Brian is just in a different class. So then they start rappelling down, and I didn't really understand why they were panting so much. I don't know if they were cold, if it was actually tough to hang up there, but they were moving down. It wasn't like they were climbing up rope. They were panting. It sounded like they were getting it on, but they weren't, and they were just sort of hovering in midair. So I was very confused by the panting, didn't really know what was going on. And I did respect that Brian went in for the kiss midair. I mean, Rachel's kind of freaking out. She's not in a great place as they're going down. It's pretty scary. And Brian's like, a little kiss, gets his kiss. I mean, Brian, for better or for worse, is a kiss guy. He's an aggressive kisser, a lot of lip, a lot of tongue. But Brian will go for it. I mean, he knows he's a good kisser. He's all about the physicality with her, and he continues to show it. And then when they get to the bottom, there's another instance where Rachel's just relieved to be down, and it looks like she just wants to hug Brian. And Brian, instead of going in for the hug, goes right in, smacks lip on lip, and now they're making out. Because again, if you're Brian, and you know what your assets are, and one of your assets is just being an awesome physical specimen who can kiss with the best of them, you go in for the kisses at every opportunity because Rachel likes it. One thing I will say about Rachel, and you can tell, is she likes guys that go for it. I mean, you think back to Fred, her, you know, that childhood guy that was eliminated a while ago. When Fred asked her if it was okay for him to kiss her, she did not take too kindly for that. I think she really likes when guys take over, take control, and assert their physicality on her. And I think that was the case with Brian, and I think that's why she really, really likes Brian. So the big question that came up, both with Rachel and as I was watching the show with someone else, and I thought to myself, and I said it out loud as well, is how is Brian at 37 with so much he's bringing to the table? He's so calm, he's suave, he's handsome, he's confident. How is someone like that 37? And obviously we don't know his background. Sorry, at 37, still single. We don't know his background. And obviously it could be something, listen, he might have been overseas, could have been extenuating circumstances. It's hard to know. But if I'm a girl and there's a guy at 37 still single on The Bachelorette, it's a red flag for me. And I'm asking myself, well, what am I missing? And to her credit, she did say, listen, this guy seems too good to be true. I got to figure out what I'm possibly missing that I'm not seeing. I mean, how is this guy so perfect? Everything he says the right thing, does the right thing. He carries himself the right way. He doesn't get into the drama. I mean, Brian's bringing everything to the table. And Rachel's thinking, there's something amiss here. So she goes into the dinner date after the one-on-one with the repelling, thinking, okay, I'm going to figure out what exactly it is that makes him tick, that maybe will give me a hint as to why he's still single and in this position. So a couple observations from the one-on-one dinner date at the end. Number one, I'm not a huge fashionista. I don't know jack about girls' makeup. And I had to ask the person I was watching what it was called. I thought it was called mascara, but Rachel's yellow eyeshadow was just an abomination. For those of you listening out there that, you know, are looking for some makeup advice from someone that knows nothing about it in yours truly, yellow, gold, whatever that was, not a good look for Rachel. Never really seen anyone. Honestly, looked like she was going to a drag party or a drag show. It was a bizarre look. I didn't get it. But listen, Rachel, she does exotic things for better or for worse. You got to respect her willingness to go out there with different looks. I just thought the yellow eyeshadow, which I thought was mascara, which clearly, even though I have a sister, I don't know much about, was just not a good look for Rachel. So hopefully she learns. It looked like in the subsequent dates she had, she wore normal colored eyeshadow, even though she wore some crazy red lipstick, which I also wasn't fond of. But anyway, that yellow eyeshadow stood out to me, and I was just like, that, not a good look for you, Rachel. Just stick to the standard natural beauty that you have. The other thing that I picked up from Brian, and this is for all the guys out there, I really like the move of Brian kind of leaning in the entire time. A lot of times with these dates, you see the guy sitting up straight. Brian really bent forward, which is just a good move, because if the girl reciprocates and leans forward a little bit too, you know you're in, right? And then you're just a couple inches away. And again, Brian is a kisser guy. He loves kissing. By leaning in, you're just asking Rachel to move in a little bit, and before you know it, it's lip-on-lip action, and away we go. So that's something that I'm going to adapt and adopt into my dating game, is when you're in that one-on-one, you're sitting across a small table, lean forward, get close, show that you're interested, and before you know it, it's lip-locking time. I will call out Brian for one thing that he brought up. He talked about how when he was in high school, he was the same size but about 40 pounds lighter. So clearly a string bean, not a lot of meat on that bone. And I thought to myself, listen, why are you talking about your junior year in high school when you're 37? I mean, that was more than half of your life ago, and you're talking about high school. It was a little bit of a weird move. Also kind of a humble brag by him. He was talking about how he had, you know, no girls were into him in his junior year. Then he bulked up a little bit, and before you knew it, girls were all over him. Kind of maybe make Rachel a little bit jealous, showing him that she's not the only one that's been fighting for his love. But it's just a weird thing to bring up of all things they could talk about. They don't have many one-on-one opportunities. And he's talking about high school. I used to be a string bean. I don't really see the relevance there considering he's 37. He's not like Dean, who's 5 years removed from high school. So a bizarre move. But listen, it ended up with another kiss, and she received it well. Was not able to figure out what that skeleton in Brian's closet was, and she came out of that saying what an amazing date it was with Brian. And at this point, you have to feel like Brian is probably looking at the top three. And a lot of people think, listen, Brian has something that's going to come to the fore that we don't know about yet. But I really just feel like Rachel has a legitimate connection to him, the physicality that he brings. He seems like a genuine dude. I'm buying into the Brian hype. He's not to the same extent in terms of my support of him like Peter. Peter is just my guy at this point. But I could see Brian being top three, and I do have him winning it. I got to stick with that. But my heart says Brian. My head still says Peter. And then we find out there's going to be another group date. And as we go into commercial after that group date and they announce who's going to be on the group date, you just see that Kenny and Lee are going to be on a two-on-one date together. And it was very reminiscent to me of the Taylor and Corinne group date with Nick. The two-on-one, I apologize, my bad. That happened like in the jungle, wherever they were. And that was one of the highlights of last season. I was expecting the same to be the case here. Those two-on-ones are awkward as hell. You're flanking the girl, or in Nick's case, the guy, on both sides. They took in a helicopter. You can just tell there's tension. They hate each other, both Lee and Kenny. Rachel obviously knows. This is clearly the producers doing. And they're in the helicopter. It's just, you could cut the tension with the knife. And I'm just getting my popcorn out. I saw that preview of what was coming up. I was like, let me just head over to the hotel lounge, heat up some popcorn, sit back, and just start munching. Because shit is about to hit the fan. All right, a couple real quick observations from the group date. They played some handball with the Norwegian professional team, whatever the hell that was. I was in the shower during the intro of that, so I missed that part. One, again, Peter has now done two pretty ballsy things on the boat before the spelling bee. He did the Titanic move where he picked up Rachel on the edge of the boat. And this time he picks up Rachel, grabs her in the butt, which I think Josiah noticed or someone else noticed. Got a full grab in there. And again, Peter is just going out there and letting it all hang loose. And he's not taking a back seat and letting someone else do it to him. Peter is going for what he wants, and that is why I think he's got the shot, because I look at Rachel, I don't think she wants a meek and mild guy. There's some guys like Anthony, for example, who I just don't think is going for. That's just not in his DNA, and listen, that doesn't make him a bad person. I actually think he's a great dude, and there's a lot of those guys like that. Peter, Brian, Josiah, those guys are going for what they believe is theirs. Peter's no different. And he did it again here, picking her up in front of everyone and just making all the guys be like, damn, I wish I had done that first. The other thing I want to say, just as a diehard sports fan, the goalkeeping was just horrendous. They made Will look like Michael Jordan with all the goals he was scoring, but it just looked like the producers were almost like, we want Will to look good, so whoever's in net, just let it go by. Just a pathetic display of goalkeeping that I haven't seen since the Brazil against Germany game in the semifinals of the most recent World Cup, where Brazil let up 5 goals in about the first 20 minutes. I'm not sure if that was too soon for our Brazilian listeners out there, but it has to be said. The goalie keeping was absolutely pathetic in that group date. Just real quick, going back to the one-on-one date with Brian, because I missed something which I wanted to touch on. Brian, congratulations. You are the first person this season to say directly to Rachel's face that you're falling in love with her. It's an aggressive move, but listen, you have to like someone that is willing to put it all the chips on the table. And if Rachel's not feeling the same way, then send him home. And that's kind of what you want as the guy, is if you're not feeling the reciprocal feeling back to the person that's professing their love, you send them home. You don't want to be strung along. Brian went out on a limb and said, listen, I'm falling in love with you. And Rachel seemed to go along with it. And that's going to pan out well for him, in my opinion, because now he doesn't need to think about, okay, when do I say it? When's the right time? Now the cat's out of the bag. She knows exactly what he feels. And now it's about time that she starts to think about whether it's reciprocated in her direction. So then after the handball game ends, Will obviously looked like the MVP of the day. But then they get their cocktail party opportunity where they can get one-on-one time. And a couple takeaways. The first is Josiah. Josiah is the lawyer from Fort Lauderdale. I thought he was going to be a Final Two candidate, and that's what I had him in my picks. But I got to be honest, after watching this episode, I think not only is he not going to make it that far, I think he might be done after this upcoming rose ceremony. He's smooth, but I think he's too smooth, and he's cliche, and he's very wordy. He's eloquent, but he's almost too verbose. It kind of reminds me of myself in a way, just because he says things in ways that most normal people don't say them. That's one of my weaknesses, is I say things what could be said simply in much too much grandiose fashion. That's Josiah. And Rachel sees right through the bullshit. And I like that about her. She's not about guys that can wax poetic. That's Josiah. And I just think he's a goner. And Rachel called him out and said, hey, listen, feels like every time we talk, you never really wanted to get to know me. You're just talking, you're talking, talking, and you're going off of what you read online about me, what you saw in the previous season. And Josiah's like, yeah, you're right, but I love you so much, and you're so beautiful, and that's exactly why I love you, because you're so... And I just think to myself, like, just be quiet. Like, ask her, try to follow exactly what she's telling you to do. She's giving you some breadcrumbs, and you're just falling right back into the trap of just saying things that work maybe on a lot of girls, but not on Rachel. Rachel sees right through that stuff. She needs someone that has some, you know, some actual value and some content and some oomph to bring to the table, not just this, you know, ostentatious bravado that Josiah has. And that's why, in my opinion, I honestly think Josiah is a goner after this episode, as much as it hurts me to say. And I'm not going to back down on my pick, and I still think, you know, top two, but it ain't looking pretty. It was a very cringeworthy encounter with him, and I just don't think he's the type of guy that's self-aware to know how to reel in, and that's just who he is. Some girls probably take very kindly to the way he is, and he probably, you know, wines and dines them and says all nice things and compliments them all the time. I just think Rachel is about more than just people that can say big words. The other thing was, obviously, Peter. I gotta love this guy. Continues to validate my love for him. He just has this depth to his voice, which you can just tell is calming, soothing. I'm honestly, you know, put at rest when Peter talks. And Rachel, it wasn't even Peter doing this. It's not Peter's doing. Rachel says, hey, let's go to the hot tub, which was clearly Rachel is vibing hard with Peter. And how can you not? The guy's got the most dreamy eyes that we've seen since Patrick Dempsey on Grey's Anatomy. They spend 3.5 hours in the hot tub. They're getting super handsy. It's an aggressive use of the one-on-one time. 3.5 hours, and the guys just know they've been absolutely dominated. When he comes back, they're just like, there's just no shot. 3.5 hours. What have we been doing with our lives? And shockingly, and I guess the producers probably set this up, because listen, Peter's going to get the rose regardless. They give the rose to Will. I kind of get the feeling, if I'm going with my head here, that Will is probably going to be one of the finalists at the end of the day. I've said all along, I do think they're going to make sure that at least one of the two finalists is African American. I do think the producers have the ability to influence that in that respect. I just think all the goodwill they've engendered by having an African American bachelorette, if they have, you know, the final two be white guys, even if that's what Rachel wants, even if that's who deserves it the most, I think there's going to be a decent amount of backlash and say, you did all that, and yet somehow it's the white guys that come out on top, which, again, I don't think there's going to be blowback if a white guy wins the competition, obviously it gets engaged. I just think if the final two are white, I think there's going to be a little bit of pushback. So I could see Will, my new hot take is I really think Will has a decent shot of being the last standing African-American male in the show, and I can see him making the final two. I mean, I don't think he has a great personality. I think he's a good guy. He's easy to talk to, and I think, you know, when you look at him, Anthony, Josiah, Kenny, I actually think Will's probably brings the most to the table. So it looks good, and he's obviously athletic, and Rachel seems to like guys that are athletic. She liked DeMario until DeMario Gate happened. So Will seems like he's taken the mantle from DeMario as the most athletic and talented player. And then finally, the two-on-one we've all been waiting for, World War III, Kenny versus Lee. They go to this lake area. Honestly, they talked about how beautiful it was. I thought it was a disgusting setting. Yeah, there was a lake. Yeah, there were some trees. But the ground was disgusting. It was weird. It did not look picturesque at all to me. I just think wherever they are in Norway, it's hard to tell what time of year it is. It looked freezing cold. They're not dressed well for the weather. They awkwardly have a decanter with whiskey in it, while the other ones, you know, talking to Rachel, that one's just sitting there twiddling their thumbs. Bizarre, bizarre two-on-one opportunity. And I guess that's how it's supposed to be. I remember with Taylor and Corinne, and I think it was Danielle, and I forget the other girl, but they kind of go to weird places where you just have to sit by yourself doing nothing and waiting, and that's part of the interesting two-on-one dynamic. But anyway, so Kenny gets first dibs talking to Rachel and clearing things up, and he says all the right things. He talks about how special she is and all that. And I'm thinking to myself, Kenny's doing a great job. He's taking the high road. And then at the end, he says, listen, I can't not bring up what's been happening the last week with Lee. And I just thought to myself, why even address it? Why bring Rachel to think about it without making Lee be the one that brings it up? Because now you're planting the seed of doubt in Rachel's head, because now you've brought up Lee. And you're following that Iggy track of just bringing things up about other people that is not necessary. I thought he did an outstanding job of making the most of the time that they had, and then obviously he brings up Lee, and I questioned the move a little bit, although what he said came out well. I mean, I think Rachel responded well to it at the time. Then Lee comes up, and Lee starts spouting off some potentially bullshit, stuff we didn't see on camera. He says, you know, Kenny has a dark side. He says he gets belligerent when he drinks. And really the thing with Lee, and again, I want to reiterate this, I am not condoning anything that Lee has done outside of the Bachelorette context. The types of tweets he's had, he's not a good dude. He's a racist and a bigot, and do not respect him in any way. But the way he plants seeds of doubt with Rachel, I honestly think he's got some amazing loyal potential. I mean, you talk about beyond a reasonable doubt if you're trying to convict someone. Even though Kenny made such a compelling case and seemed such a good dude and so calm with Rachel, the types of things Lee says are so believable to Rachel that it just jumbles her thoughts. It creates chaos in her mind, and it makes her have to rethink what Kenny is saying. Even though to the viewer, obviously we have access to certain things that Rachel does not, we're like, this is obviously bullshit, and Kenny seems like he's the guy, not Lee, and you're going to take Kenny's side. Rachel has no idea, and so she asks Kenny to come speak with her a second time. She obviously reiterates some of the things that Lee said to her, and I'll be honest, I thought Rachel kind of mischaracterized some of the things that Lee said. I mean, she said that Lee said that Kenny was violent. Lee did not say that. Lee did say aggressive, but even Kenny said that he may have been aggressive a little bit with some of the things he said, but Lee did not say he was violent. Lee also said that Kenny asked if he was in a van and asked for him to come out so they could talk. Rachel said that Kenny grabbed him out of the van. Again, I think the producers probably put it on to that just to get Kenny's blood boiling, get the potential confrontation down the road jacked up even more. But I thought Rachel did a poor job of lowering and lessening the tension that was about to happen with Kenny and Lee with how she retold Lee's comments to Kenny. And then the episode ends. Kenny comes out of that. He reassures Rachel that all that is BS, that Lee's a liar. And you sort of see Kenny chuckling his way all the way down the hill, laughing his ass off with just a very awkwardly evil laugh, knowing that he's about to whoop some ass on Lee after hearing the types of things that Lee used his time to talk about with Rachel. And that's how the episode ends. Again, I don't watch previews. I think that this Kenny versus Lee thing is about to bear out. I could honestly see both of these guys getting sent home. I could see Kenny staying and Lee getting sent home. I'll be honest, even though I want Lee to continue for the drama, and again, I'm a drama queen, I admit it, I love it. I honestly think that having Lee on it will just create more drama, which I'm not sure a lot of the other guys really are going to bring. But I just don't see Lee getting pushed forward and Kenny not. I think Rachel ultimately sees past some of the crap that Lee's been pulling. I think she knows that Kenny is actually a pretty calm dude who just doesn't like getting his buttons pushed repeatedly by a guy that is, you know, has been outed since as a racist. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out and whether Rachel makes the right call. What does my gut say? My gut says Lee goes home, Kenny stays. But again, I just don't see Kenny's long-term potential with Rachel. I just don't think Rachel is going to want to inherit a 10-year-old. And I think there are better guys out there in this group than Kenny. That said, I think Kenny's a good dude. Clearly, he takes care of his daughter. It's doubtful, in my opinion, that Kenny's going to go anywhere. Lee is just not going to happen. Can you even imagine Lee going home to meet Rachel's dad? That would be quite the encounter, with some fireworks to boot, but it's just not going to happen. So, interesting episode. Not as juicy as I would have liked. I think Lee and Kenny is going to be done shortly. I think the next episode will pretty much be it. And then one of them, if not both, will be gone. But obviously an interesting story to follow. So that's episode number 2. Obviously, like I said at the beginning, my irreplaceable co-host Dina is overseas and unavailable. She might be for a couple weeks as she leads a trip. Obviously it's just, this episode has not been the same. I've obviously been rambling at length about things that really aren't that relevant because I don't have someone, my partner in crime, to keep me in check, to bring the banter. So obviously I miss Dina, need her back ASAP, and obviously hit her up, on the social media, leave us a review on iTunes, share this, subscribe, download, keep spreading the Bachelorette unfiltered and unapologetic love, because that's how we're going to continue to spit out the hot takes and the analysis and the uninformed rapid reaction episodes week after week. And again, should be back tomorrow, if not Wednesday, with another episode of Bachelorette Unfiltered and Unapologetic, since there are back-to-back nights of shows since the NBA Finals preempted the Bachelorette 2 weeks ago, much to the chagrin of many when that was going down. This is Bradley signing off, episode 2 in the books. Hope y'all enjoyed it, and we'll catch you next time.